welcome to the Expansive Podcast. My name is Eric Kruger. I'm an author, a keynote speaker, and of course, the co-host of this award-winning podcast. My better half is actually not feeling well today. So John has had an extensive traveling schedule for the past few weeks. And this morning I received a message from him to say that he's really not feeling up to it, which is very unlike him. You know, he has, as you know, if you've been listening to the pod, he's always bursting with energy. So if he is feeling quite low today, then it tells me that he's been taking a lot of strain. And of course, lots of traveling will do that to you. I'm currently in Mexico. Well, I'm in Querétaro. I'm doing my own little speaking tour here in Mexico. I started about a week ago. Started in Guadalajara, which was absolutely incredible. Got to stay there for about a week. Did the tequila train. Learned a very important lesson, which is that there definitely is such a thing, or a really bad idea is unlimited tequila for people. So my wife and I, she came with me on this trip. We were able to pace ourselves pretty well during the day. But on the train, so this is the Jose Cuervo train that takes you to Tequila Town, they are constantly feeding you tequila drinks. And if you have the inability to say no, then you can imagine what happens to you by the end of the day, because this experience actually starts at like 8 o'clock in the morning. So literally when you arrive, your welcome drink at 8 o'clock in the morning is tequila. And then as the day goes on, they'll bring you different cocktails. They're wanting you to experience tequila in different flavors and formats. And so if you aren't careful and pacing yourself well, then you really do experience what they mean when they say one tequila, two tequila, floor. And so we had the sunset trip, which is we went to Querétaro, to tequila on the bus, and then back on the train. And the lady sitting next to us literally couldn't stay on her seat. She was on the floor more than what she was sitting on her seat. So yeah, it can be very dangerous to have unlimited tequila, but I'm a big fan of tequilas and whiskeys and wines, because I love seeing the behind the scenes process of this. I think there's so much mastery that goes into it and so much heritage that goes into it. So I loved experiencing that. And then following Guadalajara, we went to Mexico City, which was very, very quick, literally there for a day. Came to Querétaro today, literally here for a day or two, and then moving to Cancun, and then finally getting back to South Africa on Sunday. More importantly, getting back to my dogs. So I can't wait to be back. But since I'm on my own today, we're going to still do a short little episode. We didn't want to skip a week. And so, of course, John's presence is missed dearly. But I'm going to share some ideas with you today that I hope will be very helpful. And specifically what I want to speak to you about is what I consider to be the most important leadership style for the world that we find ourselves in at the moment. One thing that we all need to cultivate as we move into 2025 and beyond is this idea of collaborative intelligence. And this is really important for leadership. Collaborative intelligence is that you are able to bring people together and then bring the best out of them and then direct them towards the challenges and the problems that your organization faces. So what we realize is that you no longer can have all the answers as a leader. And the reason for that is that we are living in a very complex world. And so complexity means that the only way we get to solve it is through collaboration. A very good example of this is that back in the day when the Wright brothers built the very first plane, they were generalists. You know, so they were able to be involved in every aspect of putting this plane together, and they were able to get this thing into the air, just the two of them and a few friends. This is back in 1903. You fast forward to today and you look at a Boeing 737 and you realize it's this marvel of technology. But what has happened is that the machine has become a lot more complex. And as a result, the people working on it are all specialists. They are specialized into different functions. And your job as a leader is to bring people in specialized functions together to be able to solve complex problems. So, you know, we can look at aviation as an example of that, but we can even come closer to home. So think of like any business today. Marketing used to be pretty simple. If we go back to the Mad Men era, you'd think of a good slogan or idea and you'd pump it out on print, like maybe a newspaper and a TV commercial and something on the radio, and that would sort of be the end of it. You didn't have that many distribution channels. Whereas today, if you want to be a good marketer or have a good marketing function, then they need to be good at Twitter, LinkedIn, X, Snapchat, Instagram, TikTok. I don't know if you know this, but Blue Sky just launched. So Blue Sky is Jack Dorsey, who founded Twitter. He just launched like Blue Sky, which is ultimately an ex-competitor. So like we need more social media channels, but yes, they are being launched. On top of that, you need to know paid media. So how to run paid media on Meta, on X, on TikTok. You need to know search engine optimization and webinars and email marketing and long-form video and short-form video and the nuances of each of these platforms. And you realize that even marketing has become incredibly complex. One person can't take care of all of it. And so again, what you need is to find the best specialized people to harmonize them, to bring them together, and then direct them towards your most complex challenges. And I think we've said this in a previous episode, but we are all facing complex challenges because where we are moving to, we aren't always certain of our place in the world. Like, what will your company look like in the next few years as artificial intelligence consumes certain businesses and certain business models and then augments other business models? So we kind of all in the space where we're trying to figure it out. And I promise you, you can't figure it out on your own. You need people around you who are going to collaborate with you to think about what that vision for the future is going to be. Now, one of the challenges that we have is that when we start bringing people together, we realize that the best part of business is the people. But we also realize that the most challenging part of business is the people. You know, I'm often quite surprised that we are able to bring people together and get them to work together at all, because we have such diversity in background, in ways of thinking, in ways of doing, that I'm surprised that we aren't just falling apart at the seams all the time as teams. But I've typically found that there are three sort of challenges that we run into when we try and get people together and then bring the best out of them. The first is that every team has dysfunction. So you can think of this on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being that there's very little dysfunction, 10 being very dysfunctional. And so I had a call from a entrepreneur not too long ago, and she said to me, my managers don't like each other. They don't trust each other. They aren't even talking to each other. What do I do? And like, that's what a 10 out of 10 sounds like. That's when you need immediate intervention. Otherwise, you are really heading for catastrophe. A 1 would be that there's just a few small niggles. Like, typically your team gets along very well, but there are a few small things that aren't being addressed. So the biggest challenge here is that there's always dysfunction. And the question is, are you addressing that dysfunction? Is it being made visible, or are we just kind of pushing it to the side? The second is that every leader I speak to tells me they want to have a better team, but they don't create the space for the team to become better. So if we want to improve our team, how do we do that? We need to create a space for learning. When we survey teams, we often find that about 70% of them don't have dedicated learning and development time. So how do you expect your team to be better if there's no space for them to learn and to grow together? This is a very easy fix, by the way. It just means find some time, whether that's weekly or bi-weekly or monthly, where the team can come together and really deeply integrate new information into how they think, feel, and act. But then the last one, which is really the one that I just want to get to for today, is that one of the biggest challenges for teams is the people leading them. Leaders have a disproportionate impact on team performance, innovation, creativity. And so if you look at a team and you think like, oh, they're not quite living into their full potential, most likely it's because the leader isn't allowing them to live into their full potential. He's not activating them, or she's not activating them, or bringing out the best in them in some way. And so there's this thing that Gallup is this big organization that has been measuring something called employee engagement since forever. And typically what they find is that in any given organization, you'll have somewhere between like 20 and 25% of people who are engaged in the organization. You'll have about 20% or so of people who are actively disengaged, and you'll have about like the rest, 50% or something, that's just not engaged. So they're kind of in a neutral space. Now, engagement, the way that they measure it is this combination of two things. It is people's emotional commitment to the organization and is their involvement in the actual work that they do. What's incredibly interesting about this is that, again, leadership has a disproportionate impact on engagement. In fact, the effect size of it is 70%. 70% of employee engagement comes down to management and leadership. And so it becomes really important for us to understand, how are we going to lead people when the world is very complex and things are changing very quickly? And leadership is definitely evolving. There used to be a time when leadership was all about control. So we had the command and control leadership style. It's like, I'll tell you what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And that used to work because what we had to do was quite simple. Innovation and creativity wasn't really required. Then we shifted into an era of collaboration. But the collaboration here was simply because we realized that putting more people together can increase the output of what we do. So it wasn't about transformation. It wasn't about creativity still. It was really just about more people equals more output. But now where we shifted into is really an era of transformation. That if you are going to be a good leader, you need to be able to transform yourself, your people, and your organization. And so that brings us to the most important leadership style, which should be quite obvious. I've been foreshadowing it this entire time. It should be quite obvious what that leadership style is. It is called transformational leadership. And you might think that, oh, it's like a... It sounds quite new because I'm speaking about it in very modern terms, but it's actually been around since the 1980s. That was the first time that transformational leadership was discussed by a guy called Bass. And so what's quite nice about this is that he identified very specific characteristics of a transformational leader. So I'm not going to go too deeply into them for today. This is a mini episode, you know, so there's not really that much time to go into it. But I do want to highlight for you what those characteristics are and give you an example of it. Before we get to that, the formal definition of transformational leadership, so if you go and read the literature about it, what you'll find is that they'll say transformational leadership is a dynamic and adaptive leadership style that inspires and empowers individuals to exceed their personal and professional goals by fostering a culture of innovation, inclusivity, and continuous growth. That's a mouthful. The way that I see it is that if you're a transformational leader, everything you touch becomes better. That's it. You are able to transform yourself and how you think, how you feel, and how you act. Upgrade your internal operating system continuously. You are able to transform the people around you. You know, when I've asked people, like, who are the best leaders that you've had? It's never been that they've said, oh, it's people with technical skills. It's never been that they've referenced people's negotiations abilities or their Excel, you know, chops or their budgeting skills. It's always been that they've said, like, the best leader that I've had is someone who saw something in me, who was able to bring out something in me that others couldn't and that have transformed me in some way. And so, able to transform the people. And ultimately, as a result of that, as a result of being able to transform yourself and your people, you are also able to transform your organization. And again, this is going to be crucial because all of us are in the business of transformation, really. In the 1970s, Nike brought out their business manifesto. And the very first thing on that manifesto is, our business is change. And I can tell you, for all of us, that is true today. Our business is change. So let me quickly run you through the four characteristics of a transformational leader. Let me give you an example, and then we'll wrap this episode. So the four characteristics, they're quite lofty, right? So when I speak about them in my keynotes, I try and speak about them in more plain language because it does sound a bit highbrow when you listen to this. But also remember, it was written in the 1980s. But here are the four characteristics. The first is, individualized consideration. So this means that as a leader, you really care about the individuals in your team. You care about their transformation. You act a lot like a coach. So you'll spend time with them. You know, it's you don't just see them as a number. You don't see them just as for the output that they generate. You see them as a person with potential and that you are helping them to unearth that potential. The second one is inspirational motivation. Inspirational motivation is about setting a vision for the future that inspires people. But more than that, I think it's also about how we communicate change to people. You know, very often how we communicate change is we try and scare people into change. And I just don't think that works. And I don't think it's a good strategy because people are often in survival mode. And if they're in survival mode and you try and scare them into change, all that's really happening is that you are positioning change as the enemy. And, you know, I don't want to engage with it. So I think inspirational motivation is a lot about how do we speak to people about change in ways that open them up to the possibility instead of shutting it down. The third one is idealized influence. Idealized influence is simply that you are the role model. And this is always true, is that as the leader, you set the tone. If you aren't going to be vulnerable, other people won't be vulnerable. If you aren't going to model adaptability, then your team won't model adaptability. If you don't model openness to change, your team won't model openness to change. And so I really think when it comes to idealized influence, that's what I want to see from most leaders. Is how are you modeling adaptability? How are you modeling vulnerability? Those two things combined are an incredible combo for a transformational leader. And then the last one is intellectual stimulation. Intellectual stimulation is about challenging people to think differently, for them to be more creative, for them to be more innovative. But the challenge here is that intellectual stimulation can only happen in the presence of psychological safety. So don't think that it's about going to the next meeting and saying to your team, oh, you guys need to be more innovative, like bring more ideas, you know, share more of the changes we can make. But then when they do that, you just shut it down or you are dismissive of it because then you're not creating a psychologically safe space. People need to feel like they can take a risk on a team in order to be more experimental, to engage in more risk, all the qualities required for them to ultimately be more transformative in how they show up for the team as well. So those are the four qualities: individualized consideration, inspirational motivation, idealized influence, and intellectual stimulation. It's nice to go and sort of grade yourself against these very quickly and to see where are you falling short and where are you doing well and where perhaps you need some work. So in wrapping this, I want to share with you just one very quick example of this. A leader that I think exemplifies all of these qualities. And it's a guy called Vineet Nair. He was the CEO of HCL Technologies in 2005. So he takes over HCL Technologies in 2005. The company's actually doing pretty well. They're growing by about 30%. But even though that's happening, they are still losing mind share and market share because their competitors are growing at like 40 and 50%. And so he steps in and he goes, well, how do we transform this company? How do we get this to look totally different in the next few years? And by 2010, he has tripled revenue. So they went from like 500 million turnover to 1.5, I think even 2 billion in turnover. He doubles the market cap and HCL Technologies becomes, or they are voted as the best place to work. And so how did he do this? In one of the articles, he says that he didn't do it, that the 100 senior managers and the 55,000 employees in the company, that they were the ones that led this transformation. And he was simply the one asking the questions, inviting the voices, and also dancing his way around the world. And I'll explain that in just a moment. So here's what happens. So he takes over as CEO. And the very first thing he does is he wants to establish a point A and a point B. So point A is, where are we right now? This is part of inspirational motivation, right? So he's trying to create a vision for where they need to go. But how he does this is point A, he goes to all of the offices. He tries to understand where people are at. He realizes that many people think because of their track record that they'll do well into the future. But he starts holding up a mirror to their faces. And he says, listen, yes, we've done well in the past, but we aren't doing as well as you might be thinking. And we could be doing much better. So he calls these mirror sessions. And he's just trying to raise the awareness that even though things are going well, it could be going a lot better. At the same time, he does the point B sessions. And point B is where he goes and he visits customers and he asks them, what do you value in what we do? And what he realizes is that people don't want an undifferentiated services vendor, which is what they were at the time, an IT services vendor. What they wanted was a global end-to-end IT partner. And so this vision starts forming for him around what that might look like. The next step is that he then brings this to all of his managers and he says, I'm not going to be the one setting the vision on my own. I want you to contribute to this. So here's what I'm thinking. Tell me what your thoughts are. And so what he's looking for in that moment are the yes buts. So this is intellectual stimulation. He's trying to test them to see where's the resistance coming from when they think about this new vision. And it might be a very technical thing in terms of how do we actually do this technically. It might be a more emotional thing about, you know, we are changing from one type of organization to a different type of organization. What might my role be in this new organization? But he's looking for the yes buts. And I think it's so great that he invites the voices in this kind of a way. After some deliberation, and I mean, this isn't one meeting kind of thing. This is over the course of a few months. Eventually, they get to a point where they feel like they have a crystallized vision of where the organization is going to go. The next step then is he now wants to announce this to the organization, to everyone. I mean, 55,000 employees, that's huge. So he thinks that if I get onto a podium in a suit and a tie, people aren't going to buy into this. They're going to feel like it's just another corporate change management exercise. And so instead what he does is he gets onto stage and Bollywood music starts playing in the background. And he starts dancing. And he says in the next couple of months, he dances his way around the world. And he's so smart about this because this is idealized influence. What he's doing here is he's trying to just make it more comfortable for people. He's trying to connect with them at a more human level, not standing on the podium or behind a podium where like already you are so blocked off from others in a suit and tie with this very formal expression of change, but rather like amongst the people, with them, having fun, trying to figure this out. And so I think because of that, people buy into him and they buy into where the company is going a lot more. I joke in my sessions that I say to leaders that this is a requirement for you, that if you're going to be a transformational leader, is that you have to focus on your dancing chops and dance in more of your meetings. So this is idealized influence. He's acting and like showing people that I'm on this journey with you. And then he goes, well, okay, you know, now we have this big behemoth task in front of us, which is we have to transform this organization. How are we going to do this? And he says, I don't believe in big monumental shifts in organizations. What we're going to focus on, and I love this, is blue ocean drops. So you might have heard about blue ocean and red ocean strategy. It's a very famous strategy book that's about finding blue oceans, which is like open spaces. And those open spaces are primed for change. And so the blue ocean drops are the small things they can do that will facilitate this change. So one example of this is that they open up a portal where people can submit things they think need to change in the organization. Over the course of a few years, they action 500 of those ideas and it unlocks about $25 million in value for the organization. Another thing that he does is that he wants people to be more accountable to each other. And so he wants his managers to show their 360 reviews to people in the organization. But how does he do that? He doesn't just tell them to do that. He does it himself. Again, idealized influence. He shows them that he's willing to do that. And by doing that, others are more likely to follow suit. They are more likely to follow in his footsteps. So I love the story. The results obviously then speaks for themselves. You know, over the course of 5 years, he doubles the market cap of the company, triples revenues, becomes the best place to work. And it's such a great story of transformational leadership. And he really did everything that a transformational leader needs to do in that one interview, he says, you know, yes, 55,000 employees had to go through this transformation, 100 senior managers, but it started by him making the leap first. And so it comes back to what I said right at the beginning. It's transforming yourself, your people, and then your organization. So thank you very much for tuning into today's episode of The Expansive. I really hope that coming out of this, you'll think more transformationally. You'll think about how do you transform yourself, your people, and your business. This is a leadership style that's here to stay. And we are now recording end of November 2024. So it's crazy. We are very close to the end of the year. This means John and I probably have another one, perhaps two episodes that we'll record this year, but I think probably only one where we'll do a bit of a review of the year and what happened. And then what's very traditional for us is that in December, we replay some of the best episodes of the year. So you can listen to the ones that were most downloaded, most reviewed, where we got the most engagement, and obviously because they provided the most value. So we'll replay some of those into next year. But first up is going to be a review episode. We'll talk about our word for the year. We always have a word for the year, and we'll talk about how that influenced our year and do a bit of a recap. So very excited to have my co-host back for the next session. But until then, as always, you can find us on all of the streaming platforms. Definitely check us out on YouTube. And if you feel so inclined, we always love to receive ratings or feedback from you, either in the DMs, in the comments, or on Spotify, iTunes. It really means a lot to us to hear from you and to hear how you are being more expansive. As a last little teaser, the book is in production, so we look forward to bringing that out in 2025. And until next week, be more expansive. From Mexico, ciao.